Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How you doing? I hope you've had a good alcohol awareness week, if it's impacted you in any way. I wonder if you've been aware of anything more around alcohol. So it's been a very interesting week for me and for a few of my colleagues, because we have one of the coaches who trained with me, Annie, has been just doing some fantastic work encouraging the NHS to have a little look at alcohol awareness, which is, I mean, you'd think it was already happening, but, you know, bless them, at least they're open now. So we've had a couple of events where we've been able to raise awareness of the whole concept of drinking more than you want to, you know, the grey area drinking approach, the phrase coined by Jolene Park originally, you know, that phrase that means we're not, it's neither black or white. We don't have to be at rock bottom. And of course, that's what holds so many people back. So Annie has been fantastic at facilitating some events. And earlier in the week, anyway, William Porter was able to deliver something for the NHS, for NHS staff, which was fantastic. So he did something as part of their CPD talks. I think that was for the NHS Barts Hospital. And then the day after, I was able to do a webinar for NHS staff. And, you know, how fantastic. That's what Alcohol Awareness Week should be about, right? Just raising awareness, because, you know, we're not all at the same stage. Not everybody knows. And I know that you've heard me say a lot of times how frustrated I get that go to the GP and they just go, oh, well, you seem fine, have an alcohol-free day. But, you know, that lovely phrase, you don't know what you don't know. So we have to start small, don't we? And I certainly didn't know that there was a whole world of choosing to be alcohol-free. I genuinely thought that if I wasn't at rock bottom, that I didn't fit the picture. So I thought there was just something wrong with me, that I was neither at rock bottom nor completely fine. You know, I had no idea of that spectrum of drinking. So really, I think there's so much more work to be done, but fantastic to at least have made a start on it. And in the week when it's the NHS's birthday as well, their big birthday, so no doubt a lot of them would have been celebrating with alcohol. So even more amazing that we managed to get some of those awareness projects off the ground. So anyway, I'd love to know if there's anything happening in your workplace. I think it's becoming a thing. I think people are starting to become aware that we need more workplace well-being sessions that focus on alcohol. We know that in the workplace that you know, lots of corporate systems, lots of big companies will offer stuff for time management, stress management, possibly smoking, and possibly some, I don't know, relaxation. Or I read a whole thing about how lawyers have an awful lot of stress. It's one of the most stressful professions. And I've read about some lawyers who are offered Pilates in their lunch breaks. And so there's definitely stuff offered in the workplace, but very little around alcohol, very little. A couple of the coaches that have trained with me are really pushing this. They're really doing great work to try and make those changes. So, yeah, we just have to start small, don't we? Let me tell you about a couple of things that are happening. Community is next weekend, Russell Brand's Community Festival. So excited to be there and speaking on the Recover stage on Saturday the 15th. Really looking forward to that. Then I've got my podcast event. Sadly, that one is sold out. So if you didn't manage to get tickets for that, unless there's any returns, then that one is sold out, celebrating our 250th episode. Can't believe it. But we'll do another live podcast event, maybe early October. So if that's something you might be interested in, let me know there. pretty low-key events. But a couple of days after that, August the 19th, Saturday, August the 19th, at Sober by the Sea. It's a very tiny event, but there's still a couple of spaces. We get to create a vision board and focus on what it is you want. Doesn't matter what stage you're at. You might be just thinking about ditching the booze, or you might have been sober for 10 years. Doesn't matter. We're focusing on the what's next. It's always about the what's next, right? And obviously for me, that has to be underpinned by sobriety. So it will be mentioned. But yeah, you'd be very welcome if you want to come to Sober by the Sea. And then I did mention that there's going to be another retreat at Champneys, self-care and sobriety retreat. But I got the date wrong. So the date has changed and it's now going to be September the 30th to the 1st of October. So 30th to the 1st. So register your interest. Just drop me a message if that's something you might be interested in. I don't think Champneys have got it on their website yet. But it's one night, 2 days, absolutely packed with inspiration, really. So check it out if that's something you're interested in. It's at Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire. And then just for anyone who is interested in sober coaching, I fully appreciate it's not for everyone. But if that is where you're at, our next sober coach training kicks off on October the 6th and 7th, and it's filling up fast. So if that's something you're interested in, then get in touch. So in addition to the Alcohol Awareness Week, this week has been massive for me, going back down memory lane, because the Wham documentary has aired. I'm sure you haven't missed that. You know, the info about that is dropped on Netflix. And oh my goodness, what a thing. I mean, this was part of my life, such a huge part of my life. I was a backing, in case you don't, you're not up to speed on it, I was a backing singer on all of the Wham tours. And you know, I look back, it's, I mean, I know it is a lifetime ago, but it really does feel like a different lifetime. And of course, with the documentary coming out, which is fabulous, by the way, it really is amazing, really well done. It just took me back, all those memories of touring when I was a singer, all the alcohol that was involved, all the parties. Oh, my goodness. I mean, just thinking back to those times. I mean, I'm grateful. I'm really grateful that I was young and quite, what would be the word, quite anxious. I think I was quite an anxious person. And I was absolutely terrified of not feeling in control. I didn't really have a support network, if you like. So I was really nervous of being out of control. So for that reason, I don't think I drank. I massively overdrank, thank goodness. And I definitely didn't take any drugs, even though throughout all my years working in the music industry, you know, obviously they were everywhere. But I never touched them because actually, not because I was holier than thou, but literally I was terrified because I figured, well, you know, if I start down that slippery slope, I might be out of control and I won't have a safety net. You know, I think that was the thing, really. I didn't have kind of supportive parents or a partner who was, you know, going to be there for me. So I think it was really out of fear. But anyway, whatever the reason, I'm grateful that it didn't get too heavy at that point. The drinking ramped up for me much later. But there's no doubt about it. The alcohol was absolutely everywhere. Every dressing room we went in, we'd be plied with, you know, ridiculous amounts of alcohol. Seems crazy now to think that they would be plying us with alcohol before we went on stage. But that was the done thing, you know, in those days. And then the parties, the unbelievable amount of parties and after-show parties. It was really a thing for sure, really was. I do have a couple of memories of being hungover a couple of times, and we had to kind of get on the tour bus and drive to the next gig or you know, go and get the flight to the next state if we were touring America. I do have a couple of memories. It's funny how the really bad times around alcohol do stick with you. We manage to, you know, selectively forget them, don't we, for a long period of time. But now I think back, I do have a couple of memories of times I really would rather have forgotten. But, you know, it's the done thing. Everyone was the same. So it seemed like it was the normal, in inverted commas, thing to do. I do remember a couple of guys in the band and various other bands I worked in who didn't drink at all. And I just thought of them as a bit odd. It's, honestly, it's incredible now. I kind of look back with some shame at that that mentality and that attitude that I had back then. You know, I was probably, I'm ashamed to say, a bit of a sober shamer myself, you know, back in the day, which is pretty awful, isn't it? Anyways, it's a fantastic documentary. It really is great. And it was really fun for me to watch that, just to see all those bits from my past. I went up in the attic and dug out some of the memorabilia, found some of the tours, the tour programs, the itineraries, and look, just reminded myself of some of the hotels we'd stayed in. It was just really good fun. And when I watched the documentary, you get the odd glimpse of me. So obviously I wasn't, you know, featured in the documentary, but I was there on stage. And there's one tiny little clip of me walking onto the stage just behind George. And you can see this massive big hair. I mean, what was going on with our hair? It was just mad. Absolutely huge hair in those shots. Anyways, if you haven't seen it yet, it's really good fun if you're old enough to remember back, or even if you're not, you probably know of Wham's music, whatever age you are, or certainly George Michael's. So what do I want to tell you about? Well, you know, what I wanted to share with you today is I decided not to have a guest today because I've just got so much that I want to tell you about that's kind of come up recently. I interviewed Susan Laurie, so she's going to be my guest next week. And Susan's an author, but she's also working, doing some kind of parliamentary stuff that's really trying to build a bridge, I think, between the rehabilitation alcohol services world and, you know, the kind of let's get in there before the horse is bolted kind of thing. So just what I was talking about with the NHS, really, this whole idea of making more people aware, and even at government level, make more people aware of the harm that alcohol does. Let's be really, you know, clear about this. It's utterly ridiculous that it's so accepted and expected. You know, I mean, obviously in government we know that, don't we? It's isn't it, you know, it's Friday wine night or whatever it is. And the work that Susan's doing is really important because she's working with a Alcohol Alliance team, and they're really trying to show the harm that alcohol does. So being really clear about that and trying to suggest strategies for kind of just let's look at some of this before it's too late. You don't have to wait till you get to rock bottom, and alcohol services and the NHS and the government. This attitude needs to change that, you know, everyone should drink themselves half to death. Oh dear, once you get into a difficult stage, oh my goodness, it's really expensive to mop it all up. So we really need to do things much earlier. It really needs to be about this awareness and about prevention rather than wait till it all goes bad. And one thing that Susan and I agreed on is that when it comes to rehab and 12-step programs, and of course, we can't generalize because they are all different, but largely one of the missing pieces, we agreed, is that there isn't always the awareness there or the promotion, shall we say, of our ability to change our neural pathways and choose our thoughts. The ability for us to take back control and actually start to think about how we might be able to like ourselves again. That seems to be one of the missing pieces. So, you know, Susan herself had been in rehab a few times. I've met people who have been in rehab 3-4 times. They've, you know, been okay for a while. They've used some of the tools for a while, but then they've ended up back there, or they've relapsed, they've started drinking again. And when you ask them a few important questions, it becomes apparent really quite quickly that they don't feel they have a choice. Some of them may have been sober for several years before they go back again, but it often ends up with them, well, the statements are usually around just not feeling they're enough, not feeling that they're worth it. And I know we get into this woo-woo territory as soon as we use this phrase, but the reality is they don't like themselves very much. It's the self-love piece that's missing, always. It's always that's the piece that's missing. And of course, it's not straightforward, is it? We can't just go, oh, wow, that's what it is. We need to love ourselves. Right. OK, I'll do that then as of tomorrow. It's really not that simple because we're hardwired to have these negative thoughts to keep us safe. We're hardwired to not be too egotistical. Most of us are really very good at being kind to other people and compassionate, but we don't always afford ourselves that same kind of compassion. So this has been on my mind a lot this week. So I've written a blog post about it and I thought I'd actually just talk you through some of it. So I hope that's all right with you guys. But it's just been on my mind. And I don't think it really matters how many times you hear this stuff. I think it's all, you know, it can still be really relevant. I don't mind how many times I hear it because I still catch myself a lot having totally negative thoughts, getting off on a roll, you know, literally kind of starting down a path of anxiety and worry or self-loathing or whatever it might be. And now, after many years, I've gotten better at it. I've gotten better at putting in the pause. I sometimes tell clients to write the letter P on post-it notes everywhere. P's on post-it notes. Because when you put the pause in, you can stop yourself. You can literally put the pause in and reframe, change that thought. But you can't do that if you haven't noticed it, right? You have to be able to notice the thoughts. Now, before we can notice the thoughts, we have to recognise that we are separate from our thoughts, that we can choose our thoughts. We can, you know, make friends with them and, you know, rather than letting everything run away with us. And just this week I had two, actually, who were similar in the sense that they knew that it was time to stop drinking. They knew they wanted to stop drinking. Both of them told me that they had done the logic around alcohol. They'd read the books. They really knew that alcohol was bad for them. But they both admitted in different ways that when things get bad, when they feel lonely, when they feel anxious, when they've had a terrible day, they just want to stop the noise for a bit. They just want to numb, in inverted commas, for a while. They just want to step away from it. And even though they are saying to me, well, yeah, I want to commit to a time being alcohol free and I want to focus on all of this stuff, but I just don't trust myself. I know that as soon as those thoughts start up again, as soon as I feel that way, as soon as I have a terrible day, as soon as I'm alone or whatever, or the kids are looked after, I'll start again. Because it's gone on and on and on for so many years. So they've lost trust in themselves. That's exactly how I used to be, exactly. I really used to think that the voice in my head, the thoughts that told me, oh, have another one. Oh, you're on your own now. Nobody will know. Oh, well, it'll be fine because tomorrow you can stop. Just have one. All of those thoughts felt as though they were controlling me. It didn't feel as though I was in control of the thoughts. Now, you know, it's not the alcohol is the addictive substance, but the addictive substance doesn't jump off the shelf and pour itself, you know, down our neck. It's our thoughts that make that decision because we have that thought, oh, I'm feeling miserable, I'm feeling terrible, I'm feeling upset. And then we don't stop to pause and think, OK, so will alcohol actually properly give me the feeling I really want, i.e. to feel better, to feel peaceful, to feel rewarded, to feel loved, to feel less lonely? Will alcohol really give me that? No, of course it won't. Of course it won't. We know that logically. We know that it won't. But we just want to just do something quickly. So if we don't put the pause in and make a conscious choice, then we end up reaching for the alcohol, that think, feel, then act cycle. So we have the thought, oh, everything's crap, I feel terrible. What feeling is it I want to create? I want to feel better. Right, reach for the drink, because that's what we've always done. So yeah, there is a bit of work to be done because we have to learn to reframe it all. And, you know, our minds are this kind of complex tapestry that's dictating everything. But the reality is, we are not our thoughts, okay? And just that one light bulb moment when it lands, it can be really transformative. It can literally be that key to freedom so that we can break free from what we feel is controlling us and actually make a choice, go back to being authentic. It really is powerful. And You know, the thing is, for most of us, we've been conditioned, haven't we, to just listen to this incessant chatter. We believe our thoughts are an integral part of who we are. And so we get totally entangled in all the stories, all the judgments. Usually, you know, the inner critic is telling us, oh, you're not good enough. Oh, you'll never be able to do that. You won't be able to stop drinking. Give up sugar. Have you gone mad? Look at yourself. You're on, you know, 3 Mars bars a day. Of course, you're not going to be able to do all of this. It's a constant stream of criticism that goes in. And we barely ever pause for breath on it, you know, if we were speaking it out loud. And amidst that chaos, we literally can lose sight of the reality. But over time, what we can learn to do, what we can start to consider, is that we can observe our mind, okay? We can become the observer, become aware of that distinction between the essence of who we really are, our true self, and those thoughts that pop up. And when we can be aware of that, it's such freedom. You do have to put a bit of work in, because at the beginning it won't come easily to you, because you'll do what you've always done. You'll feel crap, you'll have the thought, you'll reach for the drink or the sugar or whatever it is. And we have to cultivate that kind of mindfulness state, that witnessing of our own thoughts. And then we have to do that without judging ourselves, because often then people will, they'll start to notice their thoughts. Oh, I'm actually feeling really jealous, or I'm feeling really guilty. Now, that is not a nice emotion. None of us want to feel that way. So then we can then bring in judgment. Oh, and how pathetic that you're feeling jealous of that person. You should be happy for them. So then we start to judge ourselves for the thoughts we're having. Okay. We need to be able to welcome all these emotions. Just welcome it. Okay. So I'm feeling this. I don't like this, but I'm feeling it right now. It will pass. Let's welcome it in. Let's sit with it for a bit. Let's have a look at it. Let's let it pass. We have to become impartial as we observe our own thoughts, and then we can get, you know, untangled from it. So the monkey mind is the expression people sometimes use, isn't it? That monkey mind, the constant chatter of the thoughts that occupy our minds, that relentless inner critic. And that's really the really big obstacle to us living our best life and making positive changes. It's really difficult to choose new behaviours when we've got the inner critic constantly telling us, oh, I'll fail, I won't be able to do it. One client said to me, oh, I've done this many times before. I stopped drinking for 2 weeks or 2 months, but then I go back. I always go back. Well, you have to really listen to the things you say to yourself that include the word always. I'm always anxious. I always go back to drinking. I'm always sad, or I'm always whatever. Is it really true that it's always? It isn't. It isn't true that it's always. Okay, we have to challenge the always and the never statements, because that's how we get stuck in that cycle of self-doubt. So one of the things that we can do, I'm going to give you a few little tips, or at least some suggestions, is just recognize that when we can detach from these thoughts, that's when we can uncover that place of stillness, if you like. And by the way, I'm not saying that that means you have to sit cross-legged and meditate and allow, you know, all thoughts to dissipate and completely empty your head. It's impossible. I used to think that's what meditation meant. Well, of course it doesn't. That would be impossible, at least for most of us, for, you know, certainly most lifetimes. Of course we can't do that. We can't stop thinking. We can't stop thinking, but we can notice the thoughts. So when the thought that comes in is writing another shopping list, pause, notice. Oh, okay. I've jumped back into the future, trying to plan for the shopping I'm going to be doing. Okay, I'll bring myself back to the present moment. It makes such a difference when we just practice doing that. You know, it is called meditation practice, isn't it? That's because you have to practice it. I certainly do. But when we do this, you know, when we do just start to notice that we can disentangle ourselves from our thoughts, honestly, it really makes a change. It really, really helps us. We can just embrace this truth and have a look at what awaits us. You will have heard of Brené Brown's work, of course, and she says our thoughts have the ability to shape our reality, what we think we become. Our thoughts influence our emotions, behaviours, and ultimately the outcomes that we experience in life. They can either empower us or hold us back. Very true. And Marianne Williamson, also queen of a million incredible quotes, says, "Our thoughts are like magnets that attract experiences, people and circumstances into our lives. When we dwell on negative thoughts, our perception becomes clouded and it becomes difficult to see beyond our limitations. The key is to detach from our thoughts and observe them without attaching our self-worth to them." So true. Detach from our thoughts, take a look at them, but don't attach our self-worth to it. So the thoughts that you're having, do not, you know, whatever that thought is, it doesn't need to be followed up by, oh, and I'm a terrible person, or, oh, I'm definitely not enough, right? And when we've got these negative thoughts, as Marianne Williamson goes on to say, many people turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms like alcohol to numb those negative thoughts. She continues by saying, when we feel burdened by our thoughts and overwhelmed by our emotions, it's natural to seek relief. Unfortunately, reaching for substances like alcohol only provides temporary escape, perpetuating the cycle of self-judgment. To break free, we must learn to face our thoughts head-on and develop healthier coping strategies. Exactly right, Marianne. So here's a few tips that I'm just going to throw at you. None of these are rocket science. You've heard them all before, but I'll put them in the... There's a blog post if you want to check any of these. It's the obvious stuff. Number one, become mindful. Cultivate mindfulness. Practice being present in the moment. Just literally practice it so that you can try and observe your thoughts without judging. A good way to do this is to notice as soon as, you know, negative thinking comes in, cravings for alcohol, or sugar, or whatever it is you're trying to change. Whenever you start to get anxious thoughts, negative thoughts, worrying thoughts, pause. And importantly, you know, ask yourself, am I safe in this moment? Because obviously, if the negative thought that's come in is there's a fire just, you know, started in my home, then clearly you're not going to want to be chilling, right? You're going to want to be calling the fire brigade or doing something about it. So it's really important just to quickly ask yourself, in this moment, am I safe? If you're not safe, get out. If you are safe, just become fully present in that moment. And then observe the thoughts that you're having, but observe them without judgment. Just practice it. Gets easier. At the beginning, it is kind of weird because you're asking yourself questions about your own thoughts, but you get used to it. So that is tip number two. Question the thoughts. Actually, challenge the validity of the negative thoughts that you're having. You can ask yourself, is this thought helping me? Is it hindering me? Is it true? Now, in other podcast episodes, I've interviewed Cheryl Rickman, who's a positive psychologist. I've interviewed her a few times. She's fantastic. Go back and have a listen to some of those podcasts because Cheryl does a lot of work around this. And I remember in one of her podcasts, she suggested that we become thought detectives. So we literally investigate our own thoughts. And as she says, when they're limiting beliefs, when the thoughts are along the lines of I'm not good enough for this, I will never be able to give up alcohol, I'm always this, or whatever it might be, she says, take the thoughts to the courtroom, literally as if you're presenting that belief, that thought to the judge. You know, if the thought is, if I drink now, that will really help me to feel much better. Take that thought to the judge, to the courtroom. Is it true? Well, of course it isn't true. You know in your gut that it isn't true. It's just a deeply ingrained limiting belief. Number three is practice self-compassion. And again, talk about it all the while, don't we? Being kind to ourselves. Most of us are kind to other people. We have that compassion for our friends, for our relatives, for our neighbours, for our family, even to strangers. We have compassion, most of us. But we're really unkind to ourselves. The stuff that we say to ourselves, if it was said out loud, we'd probably be had for abuse. So practice it. Just practice doing something kind or saying something kind to yourself. Even if you don't believe it to start with, still worth a shot. Then the next tip is reframe your thoughts. So obviously when we notice our thoughts, when the negative thoughts come in, practice switching it to a more positive one or a more empowering one. So you know, we know that we can take that thought to the committee, and we can find that evidence that will you know, show us whether or not that thought is true. But let's actually start to look for evidence that will contradict the negative thoughts. So when that thought comes in, I will never be able to stop drinking, just pause, just reframe that. I mean, number one, it isn't true. How can you possibly know that that's true? Right? You will have stopped drinking before, or there will have been a time when you weren't drinking. So that isn't actually true. You weren't born, you know, with a pipe putting alcohol in. So it isn't true. So then look for evidence that will contradict that. Remember that actually you can choose. Remember that there is so much support to actually support a positive decision. So reframe negative thoughts. Switch it up. You know, if the thought is, I know that I'm going to fail, I know that I'm going to trip up, change it. Just switch it up and then say out loud or write down, I wonder how great I'm going to feel when I'm 100 days sober. Oh, I'm really looking forward to that. So focus only on the good stuff. That's what the reframing is. Focusing only on the good stuff. Focus on what you're gaining. If you've listened to this podcast before, you will know that I won't allow you to use the phrase giving up, right? You're not allowed to say you're giving up alcohol because you're not giving up anything. There is nothing to give up. Your unconscious mind will make you feel deprived if you even use that expression. You're gaining. You're gaining freedom. Right. Focus only on the good stuff. And then tip five is seek support. Get connected. Surround yourself with a network, with some inspiration, with some, you know, one to one support if you need it. People who can help you to navigate your thoughts, people who can help challenge them when you come out with them, because we all do it. We all come out with stuff that we simply don't notice. I definitely find myself doing it. And look at the stuff I'm telling you. I'm pointing one finger at you and I've got, you know, four coming back at me. So get connected. All of us need someone who's got our back, right? We really, really do. Connection is key. One of my clients admitted that she feels really isolated. And sometimes, you know, when the family have gone, if they've been to visit or she's finished work or whatever, there's a sense of isolation. And the quickest, easiest way, or so her unconscious mind tells her, is just reach for a drink, numb the pain, right? But that will never be the answer. It will only make her feel more isolated and more lonely. And over time, it's going to damage the relationships anyway. So there's always another way. Get connected. When you're lonely, when you're isolated, there's no accountability. So it's just you and the negative thoughts. I remember that really clearly. I remember having no accountability. So it was literally me sabotaging myself, just literally saying, oh, well, I know you said you were going to stop drinking, but there's nobody around. Nobody cares anyway. I'll drink because I can. You know, I really thought I was tricking myself. It's absolute nonsense. Get yourself connected. Join us in the Sober Club. Of course I'm going to say that because the connection is amazing. The inspiration is amazing. The support is amazing. But wherever feels right for you, get yourself connected. If you are in the Sober Club, post in our private group. If you don't want to post with your own name, post anonymously or send me a message. But tell someone you're doing this and stay connected. When you do, it really changes everything because other people will, you know, certainly in the Sober Club, we just love bomb each other and support each other and encourage each other. We've already said that it comes naturally to many of us to want to be kind to other people, to have compassion for other people, to want to support them, to want to see them succeed. And so really, it's an act of, it's a good thing for you to do, to ask for help, because then you're allowing someone else to practice kindness. So you can see it as altruistic, if you like. So do check it out if you're not already a member, thesoberclub.com. It's low cost, it's very high value, it's fantastic support in there. But whichever you choose, it doesn't matter. If you don't want to join the Sober Club, but you just want to tell someone you're doing this, then message me. I'll reply to as many messages as I possibly can. You can find me on social media easily, at Janie Lee Grace. Just drop me a message and tell someone that you're doing this, because when you do, they can hold that vision for you. They really can. So anyways, I hope that's helpful for somebody. It may not even be about alcohol. It might be about other stuff going on in your life and you're just realizing that you've gotten yourself into perhaps a bit of a negative spiral, a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of going down those anxious thought patterns. I've said before on podcasts that I love that concept that actually a negative thought only has to last a maximum of 90 seconds, because after that we have to kind of pause and create another one, apparently, psychologists say. So what a great opportunity to just notice that. And if we catch ourselves worrying and being negative for, you know, whatever it is, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, pause. And, oh, okay, so I've just spent 40 seconds, 90 seconds going down this path of misery. I'm going to switch it up. I've got nothing to lose. I'm going to literally bring in a positive thought or a different spin on it. Give it a shot. It's definitely worth it. So anyways, you know where to find me, at Janie Lee Grace on social media. Follow me on Instagram. Drop me a message if you want to let me know what's going on. Check out those events, Sober by the Sea and the Champneys, which is coming up at the end of September. Check out the Sober Club. It's just thesoberclub.com. If you want to donate to this work, by the way, you are very welcome, of course. If you just go to... Buy Me a Coffee is probably the easiest way. BuyMeACoffee.com/ Janie Lee Grace. And of course, I would prefer it if we can have a coffee in real life. Looking forward to seeing some of you at Russell Brand's Community Festival. Really, really looking forward to that. Do come and say hi if you're there. And coming up on next week's podcast, as I've already mentioned, going to be chatting to Susan Laurie. Coming up in the next few weeks, got some great guests for you. And as always, if you've got suggestions for guests for me, then drop me a message. Oh, and as it's the 250th episode coming up soon. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, or if you're kind of trawling back through archives, drop me a message and let me know what some of your favourites have been. I'd love to know, you know, even if you can just remember the name of the person or a little bit from the podcast, let me know. And maybe I'll do a bit of a mashup of some of the light bulb stuff from some previous podcasts. Anyways, thank you so much. Have yourself a fantastic weekend. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.